I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touché.
You go right, you go right, you go left, you go right, you go right, you go right, you go left, you go right.
All right, time for Touché here on The Download on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin, Dave Lunny, and Chris Roebling in studio.
Hello.
For the first fall session.
Hello.
We've started the fall session of Touché.
Yes, I feel like Saturday Night Live because it's taken us about a month and a half until October in order for Chris and I to be back on the air.
Back on, and what a day to be back on. Let's talk about this.
We're better together, Dave.
We've been talking over the weekend about what to talk about. There's a lot to talk about from Puerto Rico to the Trump tax reforms.
Yeah.
You know, but today, obviously, that stuff took a backseat to what happened in Las Vegas. As it started off to be an emotional day in a lot of social media circles, it quickly devolved to political infighting, especially when it comes to gun control. Why don't we start off? Let's be respectful. Chris, how do you want to start Touché?
Well, this is why the word unfathomable was created, because I think it's impossible to fathom why an individual like this, who apparently enjoyed every advantage in life, who's obviously very well to do, different homes, cruises, sort of a relaxed lifestyle at an early age, you know, 64, whatever. What causes somebody like that, who, you know, by all accounts gets along with everybody, et cetera, to enter into a phase of preparation as he did, which results in these, yeah, I guess a total of some 30, 35 guns, this suite at the Mandalay Bay, the planning, the logistics. It's horrid. It's inconceivable that an individual would undertake such a mass of evil as this. And so I can't even begin to fathom that. And then I think of the families who have lost their loved ones, or who throughout maybe someone today didn't know, is my loved one still alive? OR, you know, this is just a cataclysmic, a kind of a mini 9/11. But as you say, without the political terrorism kind of overtones, as far as we know now.
You know, I like Chris, I grieve for the loss of life. But I fundamentally disagree that this is unfathomable. I actually view this as inevitable. It is what happens in a society that fetishizes guns, that says that, and the idea that it's politics, it's talking about, it's making it political to talk guns. Frankly, I kind of reject that, and I find that offensive, because if this man had blown up a bomb in this place, everybody today, in addition to talking about the loss of life, would be talking about how did he get a bomb? Where did he get the bomb? Just like we did after Oklahoma City. This is a bomb, and it's going off in our society, and it's going off whether it's here or in Orlando or in Charleston. And we continue to want to put this into these political boxes that say, oh, you know, Chris earlier today said, oh, we can't talk about this. I'm like, we have to talk about this.
You said too soon to talk about this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just think there's a reverence one's got to have when 58 people's lives are extinguished and when families are dealing with what they're dealing with. I understand David's impetus to speak about the policy issue. So that, I agreed to come on and talk about that stuff too. So I kind of would rather not. But, and you know, people say, well, when is it right? And all this stuff. And I, you know, frankly, I think it's always right. I think anybody who's running for state rep in Illinois or U.S. Senate in Indiana or governor in what, you know, Nevada, people have got to be ready for this conversation and they've got to be ready to talk about it. I differ from David. I don't think that this particular event is ineluctable. There's something about this particular individual that led to this particular event. We've gone all these years without somebody getting up on a high hotel floor and shooting people like this. I mean, you go back to the Texas Tower shooting in the 1960s. But look, it's horrid. It's horrible. And I know Dave wants to make some points about gun control.
Well, yeah, today is exactly the right day to talk about it because the House was scheduled to take up the bill to legalize silencers. And had there been had this man had silencers on his weapons, it would have been harder to find out where he was shooting from, whether it's this mass shooting or another mass shooting. The NRA, which at one time was a legitimate organization, has essentially become not just a trade association, but a merchant of death. And they promote that, you know, the, there was a time when cop killer bullets were not allowed. There was a time when magazine clips were limited to 10. This man had unlimited magazine clips, which are legal in the state of Nevada. Nevada is an open carry state. Nevada is literally anybody with no licensing whatsoever can walk into the state of Nevada, go to a gun show and buy the arsenal that this man had. And police can't ask him about it.
Okay, that's not exactly true.
There are some questions about whether or not there was semi-automatic, exactly automatic. So, well, and yeah, any automatic weapon,
is the only question, but right. He could take semi-automatic weapons and fairly easily
and
modify
I think
them.
This is the point that people have now more than ever before, because, for instance, this make it doesn't only apply there. There is a very small chance that he purchased on the black market full automatics. That is possible, especially a guy with resources may have gone to Mexico, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that is possible.
Right.
It's highly unlikely. We know he wasn't a legal automatic owner. So that leaves the vast possibility is that he got semi-automatics, as David says, and then converted them, either himself or with a gunsmith. All right. Now, this is not just Mandalay Bay. It's not just Las Vegas. It is the southwest side of the city of Chicago. It's the south side of the city of Chicago. It's the west side of the city of Chicago. And how many other urban neighborhoods where we know that folks are out there with various multi-round clips, and they are essentially defeating the mechanisms in the mechanics inside the gun so that they can pull the trigger and spray bullets. And that's how we lose little kids, grandma, the guy who just paid his gas bill and is walking, you know, whatever. That's how these third parties with nothing to do in the gangbang wars are being killed. They're being sprayed, right? And so this is, I think, something that the gun manufacturers are going to have to answer for. Why are you making guns to which this, quote, fix, and
this
that's
modification,
so,
yeah.
Can be done.
Well, you've heard so many people today talk about, you know, and so many different pieces of media talking about, you know, the kind of weaponry and the sound and being able to hear what came, the automatic rifles that were used. That, and we've heard that most of that is illegal in this country. And a continued argument, Dave, about most of the gun crime, gun violence that's being perpetrated right here in Chicago is illegal. Meaning it's not legal gun owners that are down on the south side, you know, shooting. They don't have a permit. They've bought these on the black market. They've right. found that they've trafficked them from other places. So how does that fit into the idea that that a tighter gun control wouldn't stop criminals from being criminals?
It's a great question, Justin. And the answer, if you ask the FBI, is so many of these criminals on the south side are getting them from Indiana, which basically has the same kind of laws that Nevada does. If you make it easy on people, they will do it. And of course they're illegal, but there's no restrictions. You go to a gun show, you buy something out of the back of a guy's truck or back of a guy's car. You talk to law enforcement, which Republicans, you know, like to say it's all about the law enforcement. Well, law enforcement's telling you this stuff is destructive to them.
The city of Chicago, the police department puts it on a table before their press conferences, show the stuff they've confiscated.
Absolutely. It terrifies the police from coast to coast in this country because the criminals are able to get through various means firearms that they can't compete with. And it's so, look, what I want to do, what I believe it's time, okay, it's long, long, long past time for, is to have an honest discussion of this. So part of that honest discussion would be to allow ATF to actually research and study, you know, gun crime and gun violence in this country, which they haven't been able to do in 20 years.
I don't know what David's talking about. There's a lot of research out there, but
no, the ATF has not been allowed to do it with any federal funding. This is 20 years.
Well, I you know, there are any number of professors. I mean, there are a lot of regression analyses that have been done out there. I don't know that ATF has got to stop the bad guys, but be that as it may,
it's their job.
You know, what I think is, you know, the tension between public safety and constitutional rights. You're absolutely right, Justin, that the card carrying legal permitted or licensed gun owners are extremely rarely involved in illegal activity. That's certainly for sure. And you're also right that some vast number, 98% of the gun crimes that we have are involving illegal guns illegally obtained. And this, I believe, is a fundamental weakness of the position of David and his buddies. Why? Because down through the ages, they have said, pass this gun control law, there will be improvement. Pass this gun control, there will be improvement. Pass this, now we've got to pass this one, and certainly it will be improved. And what do we get?
And it was improved under Bill Clinton when the assault weapons ban was in effect.
And South Side, West Side, we see the effect. And now, so now those guys, David among them, want to come back and say, no, no, this time we're going to get it right. We're going to extinguish Indiana, and we're going to, and the entire gun control edifice really is seen either as ineffectual or as a falsehood that is masquerading for abolition.
Real quick, Dave.
These guys drill hole in cheese, notice it's Swiss cheese, and then complain about the holes in the cheese. The gun laws that you are talking about were put there by your side of the aisle. It was deliberate. It was deliberate to create this mechanism. Furthermore, and this is the last thing I'll say, the preface, the first part of the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia. What happened to well-regulated? The right wing in this country suddenly forgot that well-regulated was part of the Second Amendment.
We're all for appropriate gun regulation.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, Touche, we're talking about gun control, and we'll continue to come. We'll ask the question about whether or not this will be on the agenda for lawmakers and for politicians for weeks and months to come after this terrible tragedy today. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. There's other things to talk about this weekend.
Puerto Rico
was a big issue for Donald Trump, and the president will get to that coming up here right after the break. Touche, stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what you said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
All right, it's Touche, 312-981-7200. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling in studio. Of course, we just talked Las Vegas. Let's talk Puerto Rico. Another story that before what happened, this tragedy in Las Vegas was hot
tragedy,
off the press.
The tragedy in Puerto Rico.
A terrible tragedy. Politically, some infighting between the mayor of San Juan and the president on Twitter. A really strange story on Saturday that didn't go so well for the president.
Yeah, I mean, look, the mayor of San Juan, who has been working 24/7 to try to rescue people and get help, et cetera, basically went on television and she said, "Help us! We are dying. We don't have enough. We need more help. We need more federal help." She didn't attack Trump personally, but because she attacked the government response, Trump took it personally, and he then launched a series of tweets to attack her personally. In a way that I've never seen. I mean, the woman is presiding over the tragic destruction of her city that she's mayor of.
Do Republicans or Trump supporters, do they say right on to the president for that? I mean, does it just seem like a political argument, Chris?
You know what? Were I president, I would not be attacking her. But this is Donald Trump. This is what you get. And, you know, he's protecting his territory. And frankly, I don't think she's as benign as David described. She's kind of a flake. She's kind of a fruitcake. She is not a very, in my opinion, she's not a very diligent leader. She wasn't.
And you conclude this how?
Well, I think notwithstanding her statement today that suddenly she remembers going to the San Juan Sheraton for a meeting, the truth is the other mayors have been very specific about all of the help that has come from the federal government, number one. Number two, everybody down there, both mayors and feds and military alike, agree she hasn't come at all. Yeah. She has never sat with the coordinating council, which is her primary function at a time like this because of the unified. Wait a minute. Number three, this was a two-hurricane scenario. So they had deployed assets, then they had to pull the assets back for a variety of very serious preparation reasons, because if you have assets there, when the second tornado comes or when the second hurricane comes through, they can be destroyed. So she was manipulating and politicizing, and that's not serving her people. So I think she got as good as she gave. And frankly, I don't care.
The American politicians are Mayor Emanuel in Chicago called the response inadequate from the government. Luis Gutierrez here in Chicago, of course, also.
These are Trump critics.
The general that Trump assigned to head up the operation said he does not have enough. He does not have enough men. He does not have enough material. He does not have enough assets on the island to do the job.
That's
why
he was sent there, David. He was sent there by Trump.
Why doesn't he? Why did Trump take a weekend off at his golf? No, sorry. Two weekends at his golf resort.
Okay, so this is where Trump derangement takes over.
No, this is where facts take over.
No, this is Trump derangement. And what you're talking about here is a horrific situation. I mean, we've gone from one to another. But our friends in Puerto Rico lost
Americans.
Yeah, exactly. Our American friends in Puerto Rico already had lost their balance sheet and their income statement. So they had no money to maintain their infrastructure. And so when the storms hit, not only are we seeing telecommunications go out, not only are we seeing electric power go out, but we're actually seeing ground communications go out, i.e. roads and bridges. So and then you have the throughput at the ports. I actually started my professional career as a logistical planner for the United States Navy. And I can tell you that there is a choke point through which you're not going to get anything. So David is misinterpreting normal statements
about staging
resources.
I think people know staging resources. They understand that. I think that this is on top of that, saying that the actual – and knowing that the resources are going to be choked like that, why not bring the why not do things that are going to be above and beyond, double that, because you know you have such infrastructure woes. The president has said many a times on Twitter, oh, this whole island's destroyed, this is terrible, everything is out of whack. Then wouldn't you put more on the line to help get the island up and running?
Rumor has it it's the thing that the U.S. military does really, really well. Logistics is the military thing. So the idea that we could not have done a better job recognizing what was happening to Puerto Rico.
This is absurd.
It's not absurd.
You are desperately seeking Katrina.
No,
I mean,
I'm not desperately seeking.
This is your desperate attempt at another racist rant against Trump.
Okay, so it just so happens that the two hurricanes that Trump responded well to were the white guys' hurricanes, and the one that he didn't were the brown guys' hurricanes. Forgive me for drawing a conclusion of saying, these guys are white, these guys are brown, and that's the one that he does a lousy job with.
See, that was what's lurking inside. Is another attempt. No.
It's all there. It's obvious.
It is
ridiculous. Which mayor did Trump get into a pissing contest with? The brown one.
No.
Give me a break.
The one
Trump
who
was golfing. Trump would not have been golfing. And what did he do this weekend? What was the great thing he did this weekend? He dedicated the President's Cup to the golf. President's Golf Cup to the victims. Like, you've got to be kidding me.
All right.
It was like a bad skit out of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You let me know when he's finished.
There it is. That's it. That's all the time
we
have. That's it. Chris, you're out.
And ding, ding, ding.
Dave Lundy, Chris
Our
Roebling.
Old friend, Phil Buster.
And Phil Buster on Touche this week. Guys, good to see you.
Good to see you, Justin.